Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast.
Hey everybody, it's Owen. Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast here on Fansmanship.com. Not going to make a long opening today, going to make it short and sweet. I got a chance to speak with Cal Poly head baseball coach Larry Lee this weekend, and here is my conversation with him. Coach Lee is from San Luis Obispo originally and has been back on the Central Coast for almost 30 years and has been a head coach at either Cuesta or Cal Poly for the last 27 years, which is quite a long time, quite a tenure to be one of the top level baseball coaches in the county. And I had what I think is kind of an insightful interview with him about recruiting his team, how hard it is for Cal Poly to schedule games, especially with teams from the East Coast and even the Midwest, and what that means for rankings at the end of the year for RPI and all kinds of other things. Baseball season starting in about a week here, and we got you covered. Larry Lee on the Fansmanship.com podcast. There's got to be a better way, got to be a better way to play the game before it plays us the same. I know this get away, let gravity decay and float on my friends. Here with Cal Poly head coach Larry Lee, entering his 11th season now at Cal Poly. After how many seasons at Cuesta? 16?
16 as a head coach, yeah.
Wow, incredible. Okay, so you've been here on the Central Coast, back on the Central Coast as a head coach now for 27 years.
27 years, 30 total.
30 total.
2 years at assistant at Cuesta, and then 1 year at Poly as an assistant before I got the Cuesta job.
As a Slo High graduate, when you went down south to play, was it Pepperdine?
Yeah, eventually ended up Pepperdine my junior and senior year.
Right, so when you went down south to play baseball, was your plan to always come back here and kind of get back into coaching and baseball, or was that something that just kind of fell into place for you after playing in college?
Well, I think so. I think growing up here in San Luis, it's tough to not to come back to. It's such a great place to grow up, and then you know, knowing that eventually raising a family, this is where I'd want them to be raised. And great environment. Always wanted to be a head coach and was lucky enough to get the Cuesta job and then piggybacked it with the Cal Poly position. So things have worked out well and went away for college and professional baseball and lucky enough to do what I want to do and in a place where I want to be.
Does being from around here make it easier, you think, to recruit to here, to be able to describe the place to people and know the nooks and crannies of the Central Coast, kind of the hidden places that and things about it maybe that are really great? Or maybe does it make it more difficult sometimes because you are from around here and it's kind of hard to have the perspective of Cal Poly? I always ask coaches who aren't from around here, what was your perception of San Luis before you got here? Well, you had a perception of San Luis that was a local perception before you got here.
Yeah, and it changed a lot. I mean, I grew up three or four blocks from here, and you know, my father was a coach and teacher here for 38 years. So, you know, I many a days on the Cal Poly campus, and it's changed a lot. But as in recruiting, no, it doesn't help. I actually take a lot of things for granted. I mean, when people come here for the first time and they see the backdrop of the mountains, it's very, scenic, and I just take it for granted. I just come here every day, and I don't pay attention to those things. As for the recruiting, no, I mean, I can sell San Luis Obispo and Cal Poly because I believe in what I'm selling, but you know, anybody that's ever been an assistant coach for me and had to go through the recruiting process, that they understand the values of Cal Poly and San Luis Obispo, and it's a very easy topic to sell to your recruits.
You talked a little bit about your time at Cuesta. What in the transition, I guess 11 or 12 years ago now, what was the most surprising thing for you transitioning from being a JUCO head coach to a Division I head coach in a conference like the Big West?
Just had to figure out the dynamics of Cal Poly, the academic standards, and knowing what type of student athlete to be able to recruit. Well, obviously, there's it's easy to, it's not easy, but it's easier to judge the athletic component of the equation. But knowing what type of kid is going to be successful here at Cal Poly academically. So it's a it's a mixture, and it's comes from, you know, years of being able to kind of read transcripts, kind of figure out if this kid, even if we can get him in, is he going to be successful? What majors can he be successful in? So that was the main thing.
Yeah. When I look at baseball in college, maybe different from basketball, you can see a basketball player, he's 6'8", he's more athletically gifted than every single player on the court in high school. He stands out very clearly and easily. With a baseball player, maybe it's not quite as clear cut, and there's a lot that, you know, a lot of talk about different ways to evaluate talent at the amateur level. I've always had kind of a theory that maybe baseball players, once they get to college, have the most kind of ability to either come out of the woodwork and be way better than maybe people thought they were going to be, or go the other way too. Is that something that you subscribe to as well, as far as like just, I guess, the most kind of fluctuation based on moving from high school to college, or even from like a sophomore year to a junior year of college?
Well, I think in baseball overall, it's the most difficult, you know, sport to judge. Like you said, you know, football players, I mean, they have something. They either have the speed, they have the size. Basketball player, they have the height, they have the shooting touch.
Right.
With baseball, there's a lot of unknown. You can just see that every year in the major league draft, where not all first rounders make it to the major leagues. There's a lot of steps. You know, there's a 5 or 6 steps that you have to go through before you can actually get a chance to play in the major leagues. With us at Cal Poly, you have an idea of what you would like as a position player, what you like as a pitcher, and normally we're not going to get the blue chip guys. So one, professional baseball will take their share of players right from the get-go out of high school. Secondly, you know, some of your major conferences, your Pac-12s, your UCLA and SCs are going to get who they want. And so with us, sometimes we have to, you know, really kind of predict the future. We see somebody that's maybe a right-handed pitcher, you know, 5'10", 5'11", throwing 84, 85, but does something that you like. He either has a good rotation on his breaking ball, he throws a plus changeup at an early age. And then you try to predict, well, when this kid is, you know, 87, 89, and now that breaking ball is that much better, or that changeup is that much more effective. And that's what we have to do. I mean, we have a kid this year who was our Friday night starter last year, Joey Wagman. Joey was the number 4 pitcher on his high school team. Now, granted, the 3 pitchers ahead of him were all Division I players. But, you know, if you're a number 4 pitcher on your high school team, you're not going to get seen a lot. You're not going to get a lot of time. And, you know, I saw him in Arizona, and he was probably 84, right-hander, you know, not, you know, 5'10", 5'11", and he threw a good curveball. And you were just hoping that if things develop, this is a guy that you'd like to take a chance on, and we did, and we guessed right on him. But, you know, for every guy you guess right, there's guys that you guess wrong on, too, where it's players that have a passion for what they're doing, guys that work extremely hard in the weight room, and then players that will do everything that you ask of them, where we only have so much time with them on the field. They have to be self-motivated, put in the extra time. You know, it's like the basketball player that's going to play in pickup games and going to work on his game outside of a team practice. Our players do that. That's the type of culture we have in our program right now. And if at all possible, those are the type of players that we recruit out of high school or junior college.
It's a question I've asked other coaches, and it's different in every sport. How much contact time do you get with the players outside of during the season, and how much are they kind of needing to go hit on their own or go, you know, keep their arm in shape on their own?
Well, for a position player, you know, we can be with them 20 hours a week. Once the season comes, that's pretty easy because game days count as 3 hours. You have to give them 1 day off during the week.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're playing 4 games a week, that's 12 hours, and then you have the rest of the hours to lift and to practice.
Right.
And our position players, you know, take last year. On Mondays, I'm out here working. It's our off day, and if our players, probably all but two or three players on every Monday would come out and work on their own. So that's, again, that's the culture of the program. They put in the time. They enjoy doing that. Baseball is a very difficult sport, especially hitting, to master. You're never going to become perfect at it. You know, there's a lot of failure in hitting and in baseball. So our guys put in a lot of time outside of our practice time, and that's just a key component, especially with the players we get. They have to, for the most part, close the gap of the talent level, and they do that by just their work ethic and putting in the time necessary for them to compete at this level.
And you talk about putting in the time, and I want to talk about the batting cage in a second here. But I was walking in, and I noticed that the field's just in great shape. And beginning of the year, you know, kind of how you would hope it would be as far as the outfield anyway. Didn't really get to walk down on the infield yet or anything. But looking at it, and I mentioned to Eric Burdick, I said, man, the field looks like it's in great shape. And he said, yeah, the players really do a great job on it. Can you talk a little bit about that element of being a baseball player and keeping the field up? I just think that's kind of a cool, maybe unique thing that happens maybe at this level or here at Cal Poly.
Well, baseball is kind of that sport to where you've always had to, as a player or coach, take care of your field, whether it's tamping the batter's boxes, the mounds, doing whatever's necessary to have some pride in your facility. And we get help. I mean, we have full-time Cal Poly grounds people at our field, but they're stretched thin just like everybody else. And so we make sure that our players know. I mean, they have daily jobs that they do, and you have strength in numbers. So they're working every day. We're trying to just keep this facility at a high level. Whereas there's other places that, it won't happen in my lifetime. So I mean, coming from a junior college, we took care of the field and we help out at this level. But I mean, there's programs and conferences around the country where a player won't touch a rake in his 4 years. But,
yeah.
But it's for the most part in majority of baseball teams throughout the country, it's just part of the job. This is what you do. You take care of it, and it's a little different than in a football or a basketball setting.
Do you think that's good for guys to like get a little bit out there?
Yeah, I think so. I think it just creates a little bit more of that blue collar work ethic and guys that, and we preach to them. I mean that have pride in your facility, whether it's the locker room, where it's the actual hitting facility, or if it's the main diamond, don't wait for somebody to ask you to do something. You know, if you see something that's out of place, take care of it, that's how we'd like it.
I talked with Don Oberhelman last week, and I was talking to him about facilities, and he was mentioning the hitting facility here. I hate to call it a batting cage because it's a lot bigger and a little bit more interesting than a batting cage.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about it? How the development of it, raising funds for it, and kind of the importance of it for your program?
Well, it's been about 3 years in the making. We finally raised enough money. There were some major donors. Jim Newkirk, who was a pitch for Cal Poly in the mid-60s, was the major donor. And Al Motna, an old Cal Poly baseball player from the 60s, was another donor. And we had a couple other. Ted Lilly, actually, pitcher for the Los Angeles Dodgers, wrote us a substantial check.
Who lives around here?
Lives in San Luis Obispo makes San Luis his home. And then we had one other major donor, a parent on our team. Along with that, with a lot of other smaller donations, we were able to get enough money, and it's been great. Before, we had six cages that were not covered, so when it rained, you had to play weatherman and try to figure out if there was a window for everybody to show up at and get some work in.
And even then, you were swinging in the mud.
Yeah, well, it was always drizzling. But now it's covered. It has lights. And like I said, with the work ethic before, we'd have to turn on a couple of the stadium bank of lights to have our guys stay after and hit. Now they can come in. They can turn the switch on. It's fully astroturfed. you can have six individual cages, or it's like a shower curtain. You can open it up to one big 120 foot by 45 foot rectangle. Usually what we do is we open up the longer cages to where if individually they're 15 feet wide, but you can open it up to a 30-foot wide section or a 40-foot wide section. And now when you hit the ball and they have 14-foot roofs, you get a much better sense of ball flight to where in a tunnel cage, the ones where they're usually 16 to 18 feet wide.
Right.
When you pull a ball or hit a ball opposite field, it hits a net pretty soon, and you really don't get a good idea of how far the ball would have gone. Now when it's open like this, it's almost as good as hitting live on the field, and it's better for pickup time. We have a couple of Iron Mike pitching machines down there that are always on. So it's been great for us as a team, as a culture. Our players love it. They are down there all the time, and it's more enjoyable. And then also when we have to run camps, there's never a worry about getting rained out because there's always something to do that with a covered batting cage.
You could always go in there and hit, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that something the players have access to on their own as well?
Yeah, because it's just the roof, and it's the sides are open.
Yeah.
The existing cyclone fence covers three of the entrances, and then it's open facing the field side or the stadium side.
Great.
So it's our guys come the. There's six different light switches. They can individually turn on a specific cage or turn everything on.
Great. As far as the team goes, you guys were 36-20 last year. I think started off the season or kind of middle, beginning of the conference season, kind of slow and then kind of sped it up at the end. Won a lot of games towards the end, but missed out on the postseason berth. You guys have had 7 out of 10 years that you've been here where you've had winning seasons. What's the next step for this program, and what do you think it's going to take to get to that next step or that next level?
Well, it's very difficult out west, just because to get your program to get to the next level, you need to be a playoff team, almost on a yearly basis. And there's been a number of years where we've done everything necessary to gain a postseason berth, but. With the RPI, that's mainly what they judge. It's the easiest judging tool when you're talking about a selection committee, and it just doesn't work very well out here. Last year we started out really well. We swept Oklahoma State,
right.
Lost a midweek game, and then swept a four-game series at Loyola. Then kind of played 500 ball for quite a bit of the year, and then. A couple things happened. We had a couple guys finally click in offensively, found a Sunday starter late, and then we're really good. When we won, I think, 14 of the last 17, 9 of 10, 7 straight,
right.
Swept the last couple of conference series.
Which is what you guys needed to do to have a chance.
Yeah, and we were good enough. I mean, the last 3 weeks of the season, we were as good as almost anybody on the West Coast. Probably, going into a season, the Pac-12 is the best conference out here. Arizona won it. UCLA is usually loaded. Oregon has their talent. Oregon State's won a couple of World Series. And
right.
So usually, they're ahead of us, but I felt real good if we would have got a at-large berth into the regionals that if we would have been put in the right regional, we could have definitely made a good run at it and possibly won a regional. And that's what it is. I mean, you either need to play in a super conference like in the SEC and ACC, where the first half of the conference is going to get a postseason berth, or be by far the best team in a weak conference to where you have that automatic bid. With us, Big West is a real strong baseball conference, always has been. You're fighting tradition. You have probably 40 plus years of tradition with Cal State Fullerton. You have another 30 years of tradition at Long Beach. when Irvine resurrected their program,
right.
they have things going. They're just in a great location. They have quality coaches,
right.
and they every year they're going to compete for a Big West title. So I think 8 of the 10 years since I've been here, we've been in the upper half of the conference, the conference standings, and it's. We've done whatever we think is necessary. We try to play as good of a non-conference schedule as possible going into the Big West. Out of the 300 Division I teams, we've had the fifth toughest schedule in the country, the seventh toughest, the 13th toughest. And so we try to play anybody and everybody. It's just a matter. A lot of teams won't come out here. I mean, you're lucky to get Oklahoma State to come back or Rice or a Minnesota, Houston, Oregon State. They've all returned the trip, but, the SEC schools, ACC, they're not going to come out here. And to be frank, I mean, a lot of them won't even return your emails. I mean, I emailed 4 ACC schools that I wanted to play and didn't get a response from any of them.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, it's just the way it is. They don't need to change their schedule because everything works for them.
Right.
They're going to get – as long as they have an average season win loss wise, they're going to get that postseason berth, and for here we have to have a strong schedule. We have to be really good in non conference, and we have to be really good in conference. You can't slip up on either side.
The risk reward for those guys just doesn't like
no
you said, it's just
no they had a probably 7-8 years ago we played the Big West played the Pac-10 at that time. 70 games during the course of a season. The SEC played the ACC 5 games. So there's no need for them to play the schedule. And out here, I mean, you can't play anybody bad.
There's not a lot of other conferences.
Yeah. I mean, when you're playing midweek games against Pepperdine, Fresno State, Santa Clara, it's like anybody can beat anybody out here on the West. And so the strength of schedules are great. It's just it doesn't correlate to anything with the RPI.
It doesn't always translate. We talked about players who might be kind of coming out of from nowhere.
Yeah.
We know that there are some guys who've received some preseason praise, David Armendariz, Jimmy Allen, Joey Wagman, who you mentioned, Chris Hu, Reed Riley, Tim Wise, all those guys have received some preseason recognition. Talk about a guy who might come out of the woodwork, a player who fans might not have a great feel for yet, or who maybe didn't get a ton of playing time last year, who you can see maybe stepping up, stepping into a more substantial role, or even a very successful role. Maybe a player that we'll be seeing getting some postseason praise as opposed to preseason.
Well, I mean, our best pitcher over the course of the fall and up to this point, best starting pitcher is Matt Imhoff. Now, Matt threw quite a bit as a freshman and got some starts, but he's really cleaned up his body. He's really developed a much better breaking ball, and he's 6'5", 2 whatever, and from the left side, he's got a great future. He's he'll be our Saturday guy, but doesn't have anything to do with how he's done throughout the fall in January. He's been our best guy. He's been our most consistent. He's got a chance to be real special, not only this year but down in the future. Position wise, it changes from week to week.
Right.
I mean, we're learning every weekend when we play inter squads. We have one more weekend coming up to have some questions answered, and we've had guys that are almost low men on the totem pole, and after the course of watching for 3 inter squads, they actually have a chance to start, on this team because they've really developed and really progressed. And that's what we count on in our program is that, coming in as freshmen, it's a lot of overload. One, they're getting away from home for the first time,
right.
Got the academic workload. We throw a lot at them, especially catchers, pitchers, middle infielders. There's a lot of information to digest, and they're really overloaded. And the good ones pick it up quicker than the guys that need a little bit more time to develop, but usually a lot of them come back in January, with a better understanding, better philosophy of the program. Sometimes it takes a year, though, of weight training, drills on a daily basis, get away from us in the summer, and they come back that much better. But position-wise, I mean, we have a number of guys that are doing well. One kid that was supposed to graduate last year, Elliot Stewart, one of our catchers, he had Tommy John surgery last year, and he's back, and he's better than ever. He's a much better hitter. He's a much better thrower, better receiver, blocker. So, you know, we got a kind of two starters behind the plate with Elliot and Chris Hu, who's as good of a receiver and blocker as there is in college baseball. So it's a you know, good situation to have. And but there's a number of them that there's not too many positions that are kind of, you know that this guy has it. I mean, you know, Tim Wise is going to be on the field someplace. He's going to be in first base or in left field. Jimmy Allen's going to be at third base. Armendariz will be in center. Nick Torres will be in right. Denver Chavez, fifth-year senior, will be at second base. But there's a little bit of competition at some of those positions. But, you know, probably have a freshman, Peter Van Gansen, at shortstop. You got John Schutnick, another freshman that should see some playing time, you know, somewhere in the infield or in left field. Brian Mundell, big, strong, physical kid, will get some time at DH. Okay. Jordan Brower has really improved and should see some time at first base or DH. So there's still a lot of unknowns. And really, when you're playing inter-squads, that's one thing, but you really don't know what you have until you start playing outside competition and you see when the lights go on for real, how guys respond and how they are in a game setting and when there's a perceived pressure situation, how they respond.
Exactly. Baseball is a game that depends on mental awareness and consistency and is kind of an everyday kind of a game. You talked about guys who come in their first year, their freshman year, and who really need a little bit of time to develop the mental side of things, maybe a lot of information coming in. Is there a certain way that or a philosophy that you have for bringing in like 18-year-olds, and what's the key to getting 18-year-olds thinking, and maybe a lot of them already think a certain way, but to be thinking about the game in the right way, in the way that you want them to, and translating then that out onto the field afterwards. How does that work? I
mean, well, it's just an educational process, and it just takes time. Or some players have a good baseball instinct, baseball IQ. Others don't. I mean, be surprised. Some of our better players don't have a baseball IQ. They just kind of play the game, and they the depth of their game is not the mental part. They know how to, you know, quiet their mind as a hitter and work to the best of their ability. But you know, there's the game within the game that makes it interesting, and trying to understand opposing pitchers' tendencies, understanding what opposing offensive teams are trying to do to you. So it's how you create a practice plan. When we play inter-squads, it's after the inter-squad, going over what we did right, what we did wrong. And the same thing, same things come up every year. And it's the small things that you pay attention to detail, you teach them the minute things that you explain that these things will win baseball games. And I just had a situation where, you know, we brought up a good point of Denver Chavez. He was at first base, and there was a ball hit in the 5.5 hole, backhand side to the shortstop, and his only play was at second base. Well, Denver had a good lead, a good secondary lead, great jump, straight line, full speed, didn't dog it to second base, hard late slide, leg straight, all these little minute things, and the shortstop's only play was the second base, and he tried to get there. Denver beat the throw, and next hitter hits a 3-run triple. So those are little minute things that win baseball games, and we talk about not taking a pitch off. And so I happened to be watching a few nights ago the MLB channel, and they had the 97 World Series with Florida and Cleveland, and there was a point that I brought up where a player took took a pitch off and it cost them the World Series. And while I was thinking about it, three other World Series or baseball, Major League Baseball playoffs came to mind. And I brought all of them up and I said, because somebody took a pitch off, one pitch in the course of an entire game, it cost them either a chance of getting to the World Series or a chance of winning the World Series. And that's the importance of everything you do out here. There's times to have a relaxed mind to where there's nothing going on, but there's time to zone in and get a pre-pitch preparation and to understand what happens if this happens, if this happens, if this happens. And when you do that, you give yourself a better chance of being successful and your team a better chance of winning a ballgame.
And that mental preparation can be exhausting if you're doing, baseball is one of the longer games. You know, you can have a three and a half hour baseball game pretty consistently. So is that other part important too? Like getting relaxed, having some relaxation time, kind of getting away. You talked about maybe guys get away for the summer and come back and have a different mindset or look a little bit different to you as well.
Well, during the course of the game, it's important. If you're an infielder, an outfielder, you know, as soon as the pitch is delivered, you have a chance to digest the pitch, kind of think, you know, what can happen. You got, you know, you're now looking in to see, you know, pitch and location, and then you gear up for the next pitch. But during that time, there's probably a small window where you can kind of let your brain relax a little bit and not be, you know, so focused. And that is important to be able to do it. But there are certain positions to where that time frame is very, very slight and very minimal, where you have to train yourself to get right back into it. So,
like, catcher?
Catcher, he looks over the dugout, gets the pitch, decipher what the pitch and location, or if we're putting on pick through our catcher. Now he's got to decide regular signs, night signs, what set of signs we're using, puts the pitch down. Now he's got to anticipate, is this pitch going to be where it's at? According to this pitcher, is he going to throw it in the dirt? Where does he miss?
It's exhausting to talk about.
Yeah, well, and that's just the game within the game that makes baseball so great.
Right,
it's why the most talent doesn't always win. So if you have the most talent in football and basketball, you know, to a certain degree, then the chances are pretty good that you're going to win the game. Well, as long as you have somebody on the mound that can do some things and you play intelligent baseball, and you know, you just want to shorten the game against a better team to where if you can keep it close within the first five innings, now you're just playing a four-inning ball game. Anything can happen. So. It's good, and that's what we're all about anyway. Yeah. We're very developmental, very teaching oriented, and we want to make sure our guys are prepared both mentally and physically.
Great. This season, the first game is in San Francisco, right? You guys go on the road to start on the 15th of February. The first home game is the 22nd versus Seattle. And then there's a series that's going to be a fun one, I think, for a lot of Cal Poly fans. That's the Notre Dame series.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be the 14th through the 16th of March. And if you've been to Indiana, you know that the 14th through the 16th of March isn't always the warmest time of the year in the Midwest. Sometimes the March cold snap can come in. So Notre Dame's going to come out here and talk a little bit about that series and getting teams like Oklahoma State and Notre Dame. Does that take a lot of like work and calling up a lot of different teams and trying to find somebody like that, a big name who will come out here like that in preseason?
Yeah, it's difficult, and it's difficult to, you know, get somebody to make a return trip. And sometimes it's difficult just to go someplace and play. Most of the bigger schools, the power football conferences, their baseball teams have guarantee money where they can offer you. It doesn't pay for everything. You still have to come up with quite a lot, you know, bit of money, especially here where you have to bus to a major airport, fly out, get another bus, get hotels, meal money, and it's no matter what, it's going to cost you. But real lucky to get somebody like Notre Dame to come out here. They're a quality team, quality conference, very name recognition. Yeah. And, you know, it's a chance. Hopefully, if it's good weather here at that time, it should be a real good draw. And if at all possible, if I had my way in non-conference, we'd play everybody outside of the West, because that's how you help your RPI. Because if you play, you like t- take, for instance, the following year in 2014, we go to UCLA, we go to USC, Cal comes here for four, Kansas State comes here for three. So great non-conference schedule, but with Cal, UCLA, SC, they're playing a lot of the same teams that you play throughout the course. Somebody has to lose each game, and that's what messes up the RPI. So when you can play a Kansas State, when you play a Notre Dame, to where those schools probably on that given year won't play other teams that you play.
Right.
And if they have a good season themselves, it helps out your RPI. So, yeah, that's a good one, our team. And we had Stony Brook from New York, small school that played in the World Series last year. They were on our schedule. And all this conference realignment has really wreaked havoc with our scheduling. We had to cancel them. And so that would have been another great opponent because nobody else is going to play, you know, Stony Brook. And they're gonna really do well in their conference. They were a World Series team last year. Should have been a decent draw, and now we don't get a chance to play them.
And it's funny the realignment's football driven for sure, but it trickles down as far as the effects go to different programs. On the other coast.
It's been really bad. I mean, our 2014 schedule with San Diego State now backing out of the Big West, it'll be the fifth time that I've had to redo that schedule. And it's just, I mean, Utah comes in to the Pac-12, so we have to take UCLA off our schedule. San Diego State, we had them non-conference. They come in our conference, so we had to take them off the non-conference. Now they exit. I mean, it just...
So now you got to put them back on the non-conference.
Already filled those dates. Okay, so it's been a revolving door, and it's you know, you try to complete your schedules 2 and 3 years out, and again, we're with our location and how difficult it is to get quality teams on our schedule. It takes a lot of prep time, and you have to really try to go years in advance.
Sure. Well, that Notre Dame series will be fun this year. Coach Larry Lee, I really appreciate it. I know you got practice to get to. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Fansmanship.com podcast. For more news, opinions, and podcasts, go to www.fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up, don't bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to Trouble Town. I can't find my way around Trouble Town. Signs out on the streets direct me running back.